This is Tom Waddle on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Thanks for listening to the Waddle and Sylvie podcast, sponsored by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill.
This is Waddle and Sylvie. Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
I don't know what 4 o'clock on a Friday at the end of May says to you, but what it says to me is football! This is a football Friday, and JD is here sitting in for Sylvie. And football is our conversation right now. And speaking of Sylvie, I heard that you guys ganged up on my radio partner last week as the discussion segued towards the Chicago Bears and what possibly could be what would entail their 2020 season, and a bit of, I would say, collective pessimism, as I think it was described to me, and Sylvie's decision to say, hey, wait, hold that thing right there. I think it's more likely that this team is 11-5 than 5-11, and you guys turned that around and called him a Chicago Bears suck-up.
No, I think so, it was he felt to his defense. And you know I don't defend anybody around here. But to his defense,
amen, brother.
I think it was he feels they have a better chance of being 13-3 than 3-13. Now, that's a little bit of a difference, right, from 11-5 to 5-11.
So oh, let's split the difference.
I think that's
the difference
what he
between
said.
12-4 and 4-12.
No, because I would agree. I mean, if you wanted to make me put money down and say, which I don't think they'll be 12-4. I'm not really totally convinced they'll be 4-12. But of the two, I mean,
do you think it's more likely that they would be 4-12 than 12-4?
Well, maybe slightly. So I mean, yeah. I'm not saying like, and what I'm not saying what he said last week was outlandish, because believe me, if he had said something outlandish, you better believe you would have heard about it. And we would not be saying it wasn't outlandish. But I think that was the conversation that
he says you guys ganged up on him. That's how he described
that?
It. Yes,
really?
He did. Yes, he did. Oh, Mellor, am I right?
He was a little sensitive, I think. Like, the truth
sensitive.
Is, let's be honest here. We've been, we're on a text chain, Waddle, Sylvie, Abdallah, and myself. And we just, you know, whenever we see an interesting story that might be something we want to talk about on the air, we text each other in the text chain. And I would say over the last, I don't know, since probably the draft, over the last month or so, we've been just sharing stories about the Bears and how the public perception, at least nationally, seems to be that they're not very good. And at every turn, every time there's a story, both Waddle and Sylvie on our text chain will be like, can you believe that they have the Bears ranked 24th or 21st in their power rankings?
Okay,
them in their bottom feeders on this little graphic that they have?
Let me give you an example. That's where I was going with this. Okay, I'm holding this sheet of paper that says 2020 NFL team tiers, according to NFL insider Jason LaCanfora. Now, you can editorialize on that however you'd like. Sylvie does quite a bit. He's got the tiers as contenders, best of the rest, rebuilding and rebounding, stuck in limbo, and the bottom. And when I saw it, I shivered, and then I rebelled against it. Because they have, not they, Jason has the Bears in the same category with the Giants, the Jets, the Jags, and the Redskins. And, like, I get it. I think that the national mentality or the national perspective about our team as it's direct, and I think it's a direct relation to how they feel about the quarterback and Mitch, is that locally there may be a greater appreciation, not just for Mitch, but for the team. Nationally, they see Mitch, they see a team, and then they just go, pfft. I don't know. I just don't know what Jason sees when he says that the Bears are in the same company, same team photo with the Giants, the Jets, the Jags, and the Redskins. Now, I ask you, Jeff Dickerson, you cover this team closer and better than anybody. Am I off my rocker for thinking that that's highly pessimistic and not a very worthy analysis?
I mean, I picked them 7-9, so that would not put them in that category, right? I mean,
I got them in 9-7. You walk me through why, and I'm not saying this in an accusatory fashion. I would not do that on a football Friday at the end of May. What is your rationale for 7-9?
Well, my rationale is very simple. I don't like to complicate things. This is a team that just historically, certainly lately, has not been very successful. I've covered the Bears since 2004 on an everyday basis. Of those 16 seasons, they've missed the playoffs 12 times. Yeah. Okay? 12 times.
Yeah.
They've missed the playoffs 8 out of the last 9 years. Now, there are years where they surprise you and they go on a run, like 2018, right? 2010, that wasn't really expected.
Can I interject this real
yes,
quick?
You may,
and I promise not to interrupt
it's
you.
It's your show, Tom.
No, it's our show, JD. It's our show. Now, I get what you're saying.
Right.
But what does what happened 8 to 9 years ago
because
under
a different
Because
it's a culture. Because it's.
But it's different.
Why
people.
Do you pick the Patriots to win every year?
Because Tom Brady's a constant, and so is Bill Belichick.
Right. Why are the Ravens picked to win almost every single year?
Because John Harbaugh is there, and they play in what usually is a fairly average division.
Right. Why are the Seahawks typically good almost every single year?
Russell Wilson is the bomb.
They've built winning cultures. They win. It's what they do. You might not like it. You might say, well, take this person out of the equation, whatever, and it won't happen. My point is, teams that win consistently are the teams that almost every year you can set your watch to these teams being in the mix. The Bears are not one of those teams. It does matter. It does matter what happens leading up. Now, does it matter that, you know, they just missed the playoffs in 2011? That's not what I'm saying. But my point is, what I don't understand is, and this is what Sylvie and I got into last week, and maybe this is what
was it a heated
turned
exchange?
Off by. It was not heated. No.
Okay.
But what I don't understand is, every year, there are certain people that will say, well, this is the year. 12-4 every year. 11-5 every year, every year, every year. What have the Bears done to Tom Waddle to earn the benefit of the doubt? Why do you go into it? I'm a very positive person by nature.
Yes, you are. I
don't
can
walk
attest
around.
To
that. I'm not a pessimistic person at ever. But what I'm saying is I experience this every single year. So why is my starting point that this is going to be an 11 or 12 win team? When almost every year they disappoint, almost every year, if there's two choices, they make the wrong one. Okay, so why don't you then start at 7-9 and maybe they'll surprise you? But I don't go into these seasons expecting them to win the Super Bowl and make deep playoff runs because I've done this for a long time. And it almost never happens. So why do you allow them every year? And now, there have been some years where they've made a lot of moves in the offseason, spent a lot of money, and people love those moves, make the big trade for Jay, and the next result is it doesn't work out. Now, here's an offseason
the NFC title
they don't have a quarterback game. He did, and then they lost it, and he didn't play much in that game. And even before he got hurt, he was terrible against Green Bay. But
and then he got divorced, so how about that?
Well,
Mellor, you'll have your chance in a minute. You can pile jump here in a second.
I'm not trying to pile jump on anybody, much less Jay. But, I mean, I just don't – I don't get it. Like, and then there's this offseason where it's – May 22nd, there's no starting quarterback locked in. We don't know when they're going to practice. The offense, did it get a lot better? I don't know. Not on paper, a ton. The defense is good, but the defense was good last year and they went 8-8. So, I don't know what people want. Like, why do you go into this with such high hopes when almost every year you just get your heart broken? 12 out of the last 16 years have been off seasons here with no playoffs.
All right, I'm not going to give my and again, I'm going to hold my rebuttal.
Did I go too long there?
No, it's perfect. I want you to get it all out. And I want Meller now, because he's a pile jumper, I want Meller to explain himself as well before I actually kind of respond.
Before you retort?
No, just before I support my guy Sylvie and what he was actually trying to convey.
I come at this from a little bit of a different viewpoint.
All right, enough for you, hater. Now up to me.
I don't subscribe as much to JD may have something, but I don't subscribe as much to the culture thing. For me, it's more about when you have the quarterback, the franchise quarterback that you can count on. I think that in itself a lot of times sets the culture, and the Bears don't have that. And in addition, the more I look at the offensive depth chart that the Bears are going to run out there, the less impressed I am. I love Allen Robinson. After that, when you just look at the rest of the skill players, I look at guys who are unproven and maybe have some potential, and yet still it's unfulfilled potential. So if you look around the rest of the league, you compare the Bears' offense, what am I supposed to be impressed by outside of Allen Robinson? Am I supposed to just trust that Matt Nagy is going to become a better play caller because he's supposed to be? I mean, prove it to me on the field. And to JD's point about the defense, like, all we talked about last year heading into last season was how we were expecting regression in terms of turnovers because it was unsustainable. Yes. And exactly what we talked about played out. Exactly. And so the likelihood that they're going to get back to that 2018 version, I'm sorry, 2017 version of the defense when they were great.
2018, historically great.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So 2018 when they were great, that's not likely. It's much more likely they're defensively they'll be like what they were last year, even though they had some injuries. I understand that. They're much more likely to be a good, not great defense on the field. And if the offense doesn't improve dramatically, I think they're, 8-8 is kind of a best case scenario.
Can I say something real fast before Tom goes in? I know we got a break here too, but listen. I don't know about you guys, everyone else out there. I'd rather be pleasantly surprised than disappointed. I'd rather be pleasantly surprised than have my heart broken. The Bears usually don't make the playoffs. So I don't know why you would go into every single year thinking that this is going to be a playoff team. I'm not saying going in thinking it's going to be a terrible year or whatever, but you got to really kind of adjust your expectations to what they've given you. And then, if they have a surprise year like 2018 and win 12 games, all the better. But when you go in thinking this is a playoff team, and then, as they usually do, they start losing games in Bears fashion, and guys get hurt and things don't work out, and then you're so miserable and you look around and be like, I can't believe this is happening. Well, this always happens. You're just not paying attention.
All right, JD has told you how he feels. Meller has told you how he feels. I'll tell you, and if you listen to the show regularly, you know how I feel. I'll tell you how I feel. We want to know how you feel as well. 312-332-3776. Plus, Bill Barnwell from ESPN had some thoughts earlier. Was it today, Meller?
It was yesterday that another national guy was not impressed with the Bears.
Well, we'll respond to those comments and also maybe play some of the things that Matt Nagy had to say and get JD's response to a few of those cuts as well. But it's a Football Friday, right? So
Waddle and Sylvie.
Podcasts are ready on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
I remember talking to Sylvie on the phone when I got back from Tennessee seeing my parents last week. And I wouldn't describe him as being distraught. But I remember him saying that he thought he was picked on by Jeff Meller and by Jeff Dickerson.
Really? I wish he would have told me this.
Yeah, and he was just like, I don't think they ever really kind of understood what I was saying, that he thought it was more likely that they have an exceedingly good season than an exceedingly bad season. That he thought it was more likely that they would surprise to the upside than surprise to the downside.
Yeah, I understood what he said. I even said I understood what
okay,
he said.
Okay, so
I just vehemently disagree. I think the 3-13 is much more on the table than 13-3.
I think he felt you were picking on him. So I said, hey,
because we were chanting that he was a homer?
Yes. And you guys, weren't you talking about
Meller's the one that called him Cap Jr. It wasn't me.
Them's fighting words.
Meller. or maybe Abdallah.
I think Abdallah, yeah.
Right.
That's
right.
Usually Abdallah's move.
So yeah. Listen, so I felt the need to stand up for him. And I think that we're all, if we can just talk like grown-ass men here, we can find common ground. Because I'm with both of you that I'm not expecting, but I keep the bar at a reasonable level. And should I remind you that last year, as I was part of the brigade led by Carmen DeFalco, who was the first one to point things out that, hey, listen, in the history of the, because he's great with numbers. And the Odds Couple tonight, you can hear. What time, Mellor? Right after?
7 o'clock, Tom.
There you go.
And
so they're back.
That'll be followed by Black and Abdallah at 8,
wow.
From 8 to 10.
I need to know what they're going to talk about tonight so we can talk about all of that in the 5 o'clock hour and ruin their show. No, I'm just kidding. Listen, last year, as I said to people, I was with Carmen, that it's very infrequent that a team that leads the league with 36 takeaways comes back with the same type of huge play defensive effort. Like, they're really good. Like, in 2018, I believe they gave up 17.6 points per game. In 2019, despite all of the not having the same number of huge splash plays, they gave up less than a point per game more. So they were the fourth or fifth best defense in terms of points allowed per game last year. But the big plays were gone. They didn't have 36 takeaways. They had 19 takeaways. So the regression to the mean was something I was a buyer in. And I kept telling people, hey, listen, if you want them to get back to where they were this past season, you can't rely on the defense because history tells you there will be regression. So that means this offense that was like 21st in the league in most statistical categories has got to be appreciably better. So you can't give me a fallback in offensive production and expect them to be a 12-4 team again because there's no way that the defense can score 6 touchdowns and have 36 takeaways. Well, what did you see? You saw a regression of the offense as well. So, like, I saw some of the signs. And, like, this year, my mantra is that I don't think they'll be 2018 dynamically good on defense, but I think they'll be a click better in terms of some of the big plays than they were in 2019. So what I expect them to do is basically stay the same on defense. I don't believe, JD and Jeffrey and Tyler, that there's any way that the balls rolled out there on the opening game of the season and they're 29th in the league in most statistical categories on offense. I think you will see some improvement. All of that put together, I ball that together, and what I say to you is my prediction was that they'd be a 9-7 team competing for one of the wild card spots in the final week of the season. Now, to me, they're a 7-9 to 9-7 team. And if you told me that I had to choose between 4-12 and 12-4, because the rest of the league is kind of crappy, I would probably choose 12-4, not 4-12. That's been kind of the basis of how I look at this team.
Okay, hang on.
So I don't have them, JD, as winning the division. I have them competing for a wild card spot and more likely to give you an upside surprise than a downside surprise.
Okay. I appreciate everything you just said.
I don't think you do.
At the risk of being accused of picking on you, which I'm certainly not.
I think you're picking on me.
But you glossed over something pretty quickly there. Not sure if people picked up on that. Why are you so confident they won't be 29th in the league in offense this year? I mean,
because I don't believe that they'll lead the league in drop passes. I think the quarterback play will be better because I think Nick Foles will be your quarterback for the majority of the year. And
okay.
even if it's not Nick Foles, I don't believe Mitch is going to turn into Aaron Rodgers. I don't believe if Mitch Trubisky is their quarterback in 2020, I don't believe he can be as bad this year as he was last year. So I think you will see some, like, but look at me. I don't think, or listen to me.
I'm looking right at you, pal.
Because you can't see me. I don't think their offensive line has gotten appreciably better. And I don't believe that you could just count on making a coaching change and thinking because Juan Castillo has got the controls now instead of Harry Hiestand that magically they become a better offensive line protecting the quarterback and running the football. But I do believe that there will be more of a dissenting voice in that offensive meeting room. And I do believe that there will be a greater attention to detail in the running game and a better and a more concerted effort to run the ball consistently to take pressure off of whether it's Nick Foles or Mitch Trubisky, and I believe it'll be Nick Foles.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, well, I mean, I'm not saying that I know for sure they'll be ranked 29th in most offensive categories, but I thought last year that they would be a lot better than what they were in Nagy's first year. And you could have made a lot of those same arguments that, oh, well, I mean, the quarterback play is bound to get better with Trubisky entering year two in the offense. And Nagy was a first-time play caller, really, you know, except for the couple games in Kansas City in 2018. That's going to get a lot better in 2019. More cohesion on the staff because they were kind of thrown together. They drafted David Montgomery. He's going to be a more of a three-down back than Jordan Howard. I mean, there was a lot of stuff that we said last year that did not turn out to be true. So I just, yeah, I mean, they could be better than 29th.
By the way, I think I had, what did you have them predicted going into last season? I believe I had them at 10-6. I had
no,
them taking
a step I back. Did. So we had, so I'll tell you what happened last year for us is we make our predictions, as people love that we do at ESPN. We make our predictions when the schedule comes out. And then at the end of training camp, we are allowed to adjust our prediction one time.
And after you saw Mitch struggle in training camp, you got the eraser out and scratched everything off.
I was 10-6 in April, and I want to say I brought it down to 7-9.
Wow.
I think, hang on, I don't want to give out false info here. I have to look. I'll Google it.
I will say this. Like, and it's something that Sylvie and I and Mellor and everyone has talked about over the course of that entire year, was that you and Dan Wiederer were both guys that would come on the station consistently and say, look, guys, I could candy coat it. I could blow, you know, sunshine up your rear end, or I could tell you the way it looks in training camp and it looks awful. And then there was this whole group of people that would say, well, it's just practice, JD. Stop making so much out of it. And you were like, no, really, this is really concerning.
Yeah, I can see that I picked them 10-6 when the schedule first came out. We do some sort of like in August. I'll find it, okay? But my point is that he looked terrible in practice last year. Every single day, that offense and the quarterback looked really, really bad. And I don't know. Look, I think like you, I believe that Nick Foles will be the Bears quarterback this year, right?
From day one?
It should be week one. They shouldn't mess around. If he's the guy, he's the guy. But, you know, for as much as I think Nick Foles could improve things a little bit, he's also not exactly what I would call a sure bet, is he? I mean,
no,
he's had some pretty pronounced ups and downs. There have been some good moments, no doubt. Super Bowl MVP, playoff wins for the Eagles, lots of them. But there's also been times when it hasn't worked out the way you anticipated. So while I think it could be better, I don't know. Plus, he was hurt for much of last year. When he came back, he wasn't the same. Mitch gets hurt every single season, it seems like. There's a lot of red flags that I have with this team, and I think that's why you see a lot of the national coverage skewed in a more negative fashion around this group.
Now, if they go 7-9, what type of changes do you expect to happen going into next season, or do you believe everyone gets a pass because of the unusual environment of what everyone's had to deal with COVID-19?
Boy, I don't know. I mean, the Bears give out a lot of passes, don't they? I don't know. Look, if they don't make the playoffs this year, I would look at it and say this is 5 out of the last 6 seasons with this front office that they haven't made the playoffs. I don't know how you can go forward with that. And look, I have nothing against the Bears front office. I love talking to Ryan Pace whenever we get a chance to chat with him.
Once a year.
He's always incredibly gracious to me when I see him in person before games, typically on the road. But I don't know how you can explain that away. And as much as, you know, I'd like to see everyone succeed, Tom, we've talked about this now for at least over a year. It's obvious to everyone that they made a franchise-wrecking decision by taking Mitch and not taking Mahomes or Watson. So to me, I look at that as a mistake that you just can't overcome. It's only a matter of time, in my opinion, before they're going to have to make some tough decisions up there, because you can't miss the way that they missed. And then you've got the other two top 10 picks before Mitch are no longer on the team. One was a complete bust in Kevin White. The other one wasn't a terrible player. Leonard Floyd's not a terrible player, but he wasn't the guy you needed. He didn't bring what you thought he was going to bring, and that was pass rush, even though he wasn't a great pass rusher in college. So why would he be a great pass rusher in the NFL? I never understood that one. Now you got Mitch. You know, Roquan's doing whatever the hell he's doing on his private time. Some things there that are a little concerning. But I don't know how they can recover from that ever, the quarterback. So I just think it's a matter of time. Maybe I'll be proven wrong. If they make the playoffs, then I think you look at it maybe a little differently. You say Nagy's made the playoffs now 2 out of 3 years. Things are looking good. I wouldn't fire the head coach after 3 years. But when changes are made in front offices, Tom, quickly here, you know, inevitably there could be changes on the coaching staff too. I hope that doesn't happen, but I mean, I think they've set themselves up where if they don't win this year, something's bound to occur.
If they have a disappointing season and the quarterback play, if Mitch doesn't make any progress or doesn't play, and if it's Nick Foles' show and he doesn't play well, then I think that they will make a decision with change at the general manager spot, because you can't try to make up for the mistake you made with Mitch with someone who doesn't work out. You know what I'm saying? So that, to me, would be, if you have a bad season and the quarterback play continues to be below average, that, I think, is a recipe for change. But we'll find out. When we come back, we'll play some of that sound from Bill Barnwell, and I do want to get J.D.'s response to some of the things that Matt Nagy had to say to Sylvie and Jesse earlier in the week. We'll get to all that in a moment.
What is your name, please?
Waddle and Sylvie.
Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Don't forget, we're just, Mallory, about 10 or 15 minutes away from a little something we like to call What to Watch For, as we give you some advice on different shows that we encourage you to watch over the weekend.
Yeah, we're going to tell JD what he should spend all his free time watching these days.
Exactly. I gave you a show, and it's, well, I'll save it for then. But think about something, JD, to tell the people out there, something to watch for this weekend as well, okay?
Okay.
I know you're not watching much television. What I mean, instead of television, what are you doing? Chasing Parker?
Everything. It's a lot. But, you know, it's sad. I just did make myself sad. I was talking to Mellor during the break, and we were talking about shows. And I'm like, you know, really the first show that I would watch, that I've watched in probably years, as far as like consistently, like knowing that, okay, it's coming on at this time, I got to watch it, was The Last Dance. I don't get a chance to watch anything basically, except for my job stuff.
Did Parker sit and watch The Last Dance with you?
A little bit. I was a little disappointed that he was more interested in going upstairs and playing Madden and Fortnite than he was watching this. I don't know. He watched the first couple of episodes, and then I think it turned him off a little bit. But I always catch him watching the YouTube highlights of the NBA from the 1990s and 1980s. Yeah. So I know that he knows what's up. But
he's learning dunks to put on you outside when you guys go to the basket.
Well, you know, we broke the hoop, so one of the screws popped off, probably from me slamming the backboard in anger.
Did you taunt him? Did you, like, do the Pippen dunk on Ewing on him?
We haven't played since about a week ago, and it was a very, very ugly game. There was a lot of trash talking, and I was on fire.
Tell everyone out there again how old Parker is.
Well, he's 9 going on 29.
Yeah, so. I was going to say. He's 9, but he's a big kid, and he's, you know, he's...
So anyways, I'm just lighting him up. I mean, he can't stop this. I mean, the flame was on, and boom, everything's going down.
You dropping threes on him, or
dropping,
are you working
threes,
him inside?
I'm everywhere, right? I'm like a spider monkey on the court. Wah, wah, wah. I got my hands and everything, you know. I'm just stealing balls. I'm hitting my jump shots, and I'm talking a lot to him, because he talks a lot to me when he's hitting his shots.
What's he say to you? What would be a typical taunt coming from Parker?
I cannot say it on the radio.
Ooh, does he go blue?
Yeah, he goes blue. Yeah. Sure he does. So
do you go blue on him?
Oh, yeah. So I'm, you know, red hot, and I'm letting him know about it. And I think it might have been It might have been 31-21, and we were playing to 40. Or maybe it was 31-17. I mean, I'm working him, right?
No, wait a second. How long does a game to 40 last?
They used to play to 70. So the four, I'll take 40. 40 doesn't take that long. We play by ones and twos. I mean, we don't play by, you know, all twos. It's ones, and then if you hit a three, it's a two. We used to play to 70. Play like five of those games a day. That's pretty tiring. But anyways, make a long story short, I'm just drilling him out there. And he's getting more and more angry, and his shots are not going down, which is kind of rare for him. So finally, he walks off. He walks away, starts walking up the driveway into the garage, and I start yelling at him that he's just like the Pistons in the 1991 the Eastern Conference Finals and blah blah blah. And we haven't played basketball since. We played a lot of baseball since then, but he hasn't. He hasn't tried his luck against the LeBron James of this generation.
All right.
It's, you know?
It's funny you had that experience, JD, because I told Waddle a story a few weeks back after the Last Dance episode with the Pistons. My son Alex, I guess, was playing my wife Michelle one-on-one in the driveway, and she actually played in high school, so she's a pretty good player. She's got a pretty good shot, and she was, you know, just hitting jumpers, and all of a sudden he starts hacking her like crazy, and she's like, Alex, knock it off with the fouls. And he told her immediately, he goes, no, I'm the Detroit Pistons. And so he actually learns, you know, how to play some rough defense to try and stop her because she's better than him.
I like that.
Did he walk off the court as well when Michelle ended up beating him?
Not that time, but he definitely has the sportsmanship of the 91 Pistons because when he's losing at any game, he does not take it well.
But he does, and Parker changes the score on you too. So I made it a point every time I hit a basket, I would repeat the score to him. So he knew he couldn't mess with the score. Like all of a sudden he'll have 11, then he'll have 15. It's like, no, you had 11. But if you don't say it after every possession, you give him a chance to fudge the score.
Has he beaten you yet?
Oh yes,
he has.
Legit can beat me sometimes. Well, you know, and I'm not supposed to. I told the story to Sylvie, but I'm not supposed to block his shot because, like, 2 weeks ago, I was really mad at him, and he went up for, and I was like, I'm sending him a message, and he went up for a layup, and I just hammered him, and I thought he broke his wrist, and I'm like, oh, Jeff, you weren't supposed to block his shot. You're mad at him. Now you broke his wrist. We got to go to the emergency room. COVID-19. What are you doing? So I was. He ended up fine. We put some ice on the wrist, and he was fine. But I swore at that point that I would no longer block his shots. So I can't block his shots. I can play good defense. I body up on him. I stick my knee right up in him, his back, you know. But I can't block his shots. That's my one limitation.
I like this. In the Dickerson household, they have the 90 hand check rule play. I like that, JD.
That's right. They're old school rules.
Damn right.
It's not like today's NBA where if you blow on a guy, it's a foul. No. We play pretty aggressive. He'll just, like an axe handle to me, like forearm in the back. That's how the kids play.
What do the neighbors say?
They're usually in the house.
Yeah.
They know. Okay. My neighbors understand.
They don't need to be part of it.
They don't judge. They know what I'm dealing with here. They understand that
sometimes it
gets a little rough.
Hey, I promised to play the Bill Barnwell. Was it yesterday?
Yes, he was on Cap and Company yesterday when Black and Jesse Rogers were hosting.
All right, so I wanted to get JD's response to what Bill Barnwell had to say.
Which one do you want? Do you want where he rips the Jimmy Graham signing, or do you want his outlook on the 2020 Bears expectations?
Can you play them both? Do you have time?
Let's go. I think the Jimmy Graham cut is juicier, so let's just
give that one first. Let's go juicy.
I just think when I look at the Bears, if you ask around the league and you say, just ask 10 people, hey, what was the worst signing of the offseason? I think half of them would say the Jimmy Graham signing. And, Jimmy Graham is a player who obviously, at his peak, very talented, a disruptive force in the passing game, a guy who you had to change your defense to play. But anyone who's seen him in Green Bay over the past couple of years, he has not been that guy in an offense that was absolutely begging for someone to be that guy besides Devontae Adams, a guy who has lost a step as a route runner, a guy who really is a dismal blocker, if we're being honest. Bring him in for 1 year on a $2 million contract, sure, I have no issue with that. But, to give him about $9 million a year, to give him a no-trade clause, I just, that contract seemed to just make believe in what the Bears were evaluating when it came to, you know, tape and it came to what they were planning on doing. So I think that's why they sort of dropped below the other teams, is that other teams might have had questionable free agent signings. I think the Jimmy Graham signing was, you know, really the absolute worst signing any team made this offseason.
So, J.D., I think we were all kind of on the same page when this signing was announced. Have you had any change of heart with regard to how you feel about the signing over the course of the last several weeks?
Not really. I'll tell you, I was on a Zoom call, and all I do, by the way, are these Zoom calls with NFL Nation. We were on a Zoom call. It was me, it was Domofsky in Green Bay, it was Mike Rothstein in Detroit, and Courtney Cronin, who is actually from Chicago, so she's in Chicago right now with her parents, but she covers our great Vikings reporter for ESPN.com. And we were doing some round table or something or another, right? We're on Zoom. We're recording it. And the Jimmy Graham thing came up. And Domofsky goes, you know, when that happened, when the Bears signed Jimmy Graham, I got a text from one of my Packers people in the front office, and they texted Domofsky, did the Bears watch any of our games last year? So I thought that was kind of funny. Yeah. So I will leave it at that. I think a lot of people thought that the league had retired Jimmy Graham last year. That may have been the case in a lot of pockets of the NFL, but in Chicago, that's not the case. So, hey, maybe that turns out to be a great signing. Maybe he can run. He feels good. He's healthy. Or maybe it will go as most people predict. But as far as me changing my opinion, because, you know, now maybe, Tom, if we had OTAs and I could see Jimmy Graham out there running at practice,
right,
I would say, yeah, you know, he actually is moving pretty well. But since I haven't had the luxury of seeing that, it's hard for me to move off what I think the prevailing sentiment has been about that that signing.
All right, as we kind of wrap up the football conversation, J.D. has the Bears. I mean, obviously it's early. We haven't even gotten to June, but you have them at 7-9, right?
7-9.
I have them at 9-7, and Meller, you have what, 1-15?
At 2-14, Tom.
No, seriously, what do you have?
6-10.
6-10. I think that's up a game. I thought you had him at 5-11 a bit ago. Maybe you're getting more optimistic.
You shamed him into moving up to 6-10.
I'll be honest. I don't have like a spreadsheet of, you know, predictions that I've given. So, like 5-11, I could easily, you know, give you that as well, if that's what you want me to be on record as.
I know your predictions may not be good, but your suggestions for what to watch for, those are excellent. And we will tell you all what to watch for this weekend when we return.
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
Follow at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87 on Twitter.
This hour is brought to you by the Home Loan Expert. Most lenders have tightened up their guidelines, but not at the Home Loan Experts. They're originating loans, saving clients hundreds, if not thousands of dollars a month. TheHomeLoanExpert.com. Time for us now to tell you what to watch for.
Waddle and Sylvie get you set for your weekend viewing with What to Watch For.
I think this is one of the more underrated segments of our program. Would you agree, Meller?
I would, although sometimes I feel like the suggestions I'm giving are falling on deaf ears.
Why?
2 weeks ago, I gave out Bad Education on HBO, on Monday, Sylvie started telling us about a new movie that he watched called Bad Education.
So. Well, I mean, deaf ears just means, you know, like us not listening. Maybe not the listening audience. Maybe there's people out there that watch. Actually, my wife asked me if there was something that I knew of that we should start watching, and I actually told her something that you would mention, something about a bad school.
Thank you.
And then I saw the promotion for Bad Education. I said, that's it. We have not started it yet.
It's a solid flick. I mean, look, you know, you're always looking for something new to watch, so I thought it was worth mentioning.
Now, I know, as JD has told us earlier, that he doesn't have much time for television. I get it, totally.
Yeah, this is like us flaunting at him all the free time we have.
Flexing. You're flexing.
Yes, we are
right
flexing,
now.
JD. But if you had something like you're interested in, that you'd be willing to share with the audience out there, make a suggestion to them like, hey, I'm JD, and I love this program, and you will too.
Have you seen, I haven't watched really any of them live, but they're always on. Have you seen the new Celebrity IOU on HGTV? Anyone see that?
I have not.
I don't even know what that is.
So it's basically, it's the Property Brothers, which
yes,
I like.
Yes, of course.
Right, you know Property Brothers. Well, what they're doing is they're teaming up with a celebrity, and that celebrity is rewarding someone important in their life with like a brand new home renovation. So they're getting some heavy hitters. The first episode was Brad Pitt. And just to give you a little quick backstory, so Brad Pitt has this long time.
It's big, right? Time.
So it's Brad Pitt and the Property Brothers.
Jonathan and Drew.
Brad Pitt had his forever makeup artist, right? And he's really close with this woman. And, you know, being that he's Brad Pitt, he's got some huge property somewhere. And he's got this, like, storage shed at the back of the property that was, I don't know, like 800 square feet, something like that, right? And so the Property Brothers renovated that and turned that into a home for the stylist to have on his property.
So she really lives now on his property.
Well, I don't know if that's her only residence. I think so. I mean, I don't think she makes a ton of money, even though she's super tight with Brad Pitt. So Brad Pitt turned something that he wasn't using into this really cool, it was smaller, but
nice,
really cool home for this woman. And they have some pretty big stars that do this. So that's kind of cool. And
like, see, that's a pretty good to watch for,
well,
JD.
Well done, JD. Now, yeah. I will say this. I like the Property Brothers, but I preferred Chip and Joanna Gaines when their show was on.
Yeah, that was a pretty good show. There's also that show in, is it Mississippi, where they just renovate homes in their hometown? And I think it's called Hometown. I like some of their style designs, but I just feel like...
Are you handy? I didn't say handsy. Are you handy around the house?
No, I'm not at all. I like houses, though.
Yeah.
I can't do any of this my own. I like decor. Maybe I'm like an aspiring designer. I don't know, but I do like those shows. So, but yeah, check out Celebrity IOU. It's not too bad.
I like it. I'm going to suggest something I mentioned the other day. Now, it's a dark show, but I think based on the performance of Mark Ruffalo, he plays identical twins. It's called I Know This Much Is True. I believe there's been two episodes. Is that right, Meller, so far on HBO?
Yes, and I watched.
And I pointed you in that direction, and you saw the first one, and what did you think?
It's funny because I had DVR'd this because it was Ruffalo, and so I was intrigued by it, but I hadn't gotten to it. And then you were talking it up the other day, so I was like, all right, last night I had a little bit of time, so I watched the first episode, and you were talking about how both your wife and daughter had checked out because they said this is too depressing.
Yeah, my daughter got up off the couch and said, I'm out, tapped out. She's like, you know what, this is too dark. My wife tried to do the same, and I told her, I said, listen, that's the beauty of the art, is that it is moving you to have this emotion. That's how you know this is a good program.
And I am one episode in. I have the second episode ready to go on the DVR. I will watch it this weekend. And I am determining right now whether or not it is more or less depressing than Manchester by the Sea. So
it is dark. It is like it's shot in a dark fashion. It's raining all the time, but Ruffalo's fantastic in it, isn't he?
Yeah, look, he's a great actor. So it's worth your time, but yes, just know going in that if you're looking for something uplifting in these great times,
yeah,
this is probably not the show for you.
Yeah. What do you have, Meller?
For me, I'm going to mention I'm still getting into it right now, so I can't give it but it's getting lots of rave reviews from everybody. The show Normal People on Hulu. It's a show about an Irish couple that is basically they're both very highly intelligent young people in their 20s who are in a relationship. And essentially, while they're both very interesting, they're maybe not on the same wavelengths as one another. It's getting rave reviews. I've seen the first episode. I'm intrigued, so I would recommend checking out Normal People if you have Hulu as a streaming service.
Let me reiterate something also that Jason Hayward said to us yesterday when I asked him about what he's binge-watching these days on Apple TV. It's something that I started watching with my family a couple of weeks ago. It's called Defending Jacob with Chris Evans, who plays Captain America, right? In the Marvel movies.
You are correct.
That's good as well. Is Tyler still around or is he
now
twitching?
He's actually fixing our Twitch stream as we speak. So
okay, I get it. Hey, when we come back, I want to tell you about to reiterate something that we have done with one of our great partners that is providing a great opportunity to a small business in the Chicagoland
community, and I want to know what JD's got on his to-do list now that The Last Dance has come and gone. That's next in 2 minutes.